Welcome to RCGP Scotland Presents Generally Speaking. In this, the sixth episode of the podcast, RCGP Scotland Chair Dr. Chris Provan talks to Professor Lindsay Pope about the college's most recent paper, Whole Person Medical Care, The Value of the General Practitioner.
Well, hello everybody, it's Chris Provan again, Chair of RCGP Scotland. Welcome you to our latest podcast, and with me today is Professor Lindsay Pope, who is very, very welcome, and we're looking forward to having a good conversation about our recent paper, Whole Person Medical Care, The Value of the General Practitioner. Lindsay has enormous general practice, practical and research experience, and so, Lindsay, tell me a bit about yourself and your background, please.
Yeah, sure, Chris. So I work as an academic GP, which means, as you know, I wear several different hats and I pick and choose which one at different times. So clinically, I still work as a GP in Inverclyde in the same deep end practice in Port Glasgow, where I've been for, it'll be 20 years next year. My academic perspective, my main role is at Glasgow University, where I'm the head of GP teaching. I'm a professor of medical education and I'm one of our international deans. But I've also got further roles as the director of the Scottish School of Primary Care, and I'm also one of the associate postgraduate deans for academic medicine at NEST. And when it comes to my research interests, they are very much around workforce, workforce well-being, workforce retention, career decision-making, and then thinking about how we train that workforce. So I'm very interested in educating generalists and generalism, workplace learning, and a bit of assessment as well.
Right, and you also contribute to a book I'd recommend called Generalism in Clinical Practice and Education, which actually I read as part of the preparation for this paper, and it's a really good book. I would recommend it to people. So I would ask you really to really reflect for us what value you think that general practitioners bring to their patients, and really your thoughts around the paper that we produced, Whole Person Medical Care. What do you think?
Gosh, where to start?
Absolutely, it's such a big question.
And I probably will return the compliment and say actually how much I really enjoyed reading your report, and I would really recommend people read that if they haven't had the opportunity to do that, because I think it does pull together nicely lots of different aspects when we think about the value. I mean, I suppose the nice and probably most important place to start is thinking about that relationship we have with our patients and the communities that we serve. You know, when I think about the patients sitting in front of me, you know, having been based in the same practice for so long, I feel like many of them I've gotten to know really well, but they've gotten to know me really well. And it's the real strength of that relationship over time and how that's developed and grown that really, I think, helps me as a GP understand sometimes where they're coming from with things, what actually matters to them. And then thinking about how that impacts on their health, but also their families as well, because quite often I'm looking after members, often of their immediate family, but also often as well as their extended family. You know, I don't need to sit there and look back through their records to remember they had a diagnosis of breast cancer, for example, 10 years ago, because I was the person when they came in scared that they'd found a lump in their breast and said to them, you know, I think we do need to get you to the breast clinic, and then saw them after they were diagnosed and followed them up afterwards and saw them through the other end. And so I know that they've got that niggle back there when they come to see you with something else, that this might be that again, or this might be cancer again. So I think there's that huge, huge value that you can get from, you know, what Kieran Sweeney described as the much more relational aspects of care rather than just the transactional aspects of care.
I think it's absolutely right. I think one of the themes around this is really the taskification. I just invented a word, but you know, it's that they think they can break everything down, but that's not the way human beings work. And really an emphasis on those relationships. When everybody's trying to reform and look at technology, we have to be aware of the over-industrialization of things and go back to those relationships. And let's just talk about continuity, because you've really touched on it there, those relationships, which is really important. I know exactly what you mean, because it's something that I enjoy with the job as well. Yeah. I think it's good for the GP as well. What do you think of the evidence around continuity there?
Yeah, I think it's really important to think about the evidence, because it's not just one of these things, because somebody just said, oh, you know, in the healthcare system today, it's just a nice thing to have. And actually, the evidence is there that it can improve patient outcomes, it can decrease mortality, it can reduce referrals to hospital, it can reduce inpatient admissions, out-of-hours encounters, etc. It's not going to stop all that, but even just reducing it and looking at some of the health economics around it and the wider health economics around investing in the primary care part of the system, actually it looks like it would pay for itself if you invested more upfront, which is why it's always surprising when you read that figure that, you know, what's 6% of the NHS budget is invested in general practice. And it just seems nonsensical when you think about if you invest upfront, you could save money further down the system.
I mean, I think that's part of the point of the paper is trying to think about those things. And it is evidence. It's not just us looking at something and say it would be nice to have this. It really is actually preventing people going to hospital and better care, more satisfaction from the patient feedback, all of those types of things. Outcomes are better. And for every pound you spend in general practice, you get £14 back in the economy.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's difficult for GPs sometimes when we're so pressurized now and there's not enough of us and there's not enough on the budget. Can we improve continuity of care, do you think? I mean, how do we do that?
Yeah, I think we can. I think it does need a bit of an investment in time, but I think you can think of it in different levels. And I think if you do that, it's one of these things that will pay back. So there's simple things that I've reflected on that I do as a GP sometimes when I'm talking to my trainees about how I facilitate this, especially as I'm only in the practice part of the week. So, you know, I will say to patients, you know, I'd like to see you back to see how you get on with this treatment. It helps inform my learning to see how their care evolves, but actually lets them know that you care about what happens next to them and that you often will have a plan for what to do next as well. You're often thinking, actually, if this doesn't work, what's the next thing I'm going to do? And as someone who's only in the practice part of the week, I'll make sure my documentation, so in the same way as junior doctors think about handover when they hand patients over in shifts, it's really important to document, actually, this is what I'm thinking might be going on. This is where I think we might go next. You know, if this doesn't happen, then I will be referring them, or if this doesn't happen, then I'll be arranging this test, and all those kind of aspects, and then communicating that within the practice team are so, so important. The other thing that I think is a big challenge, and you've already touched on the pressures in practice, is how do you structure your appointment system, for example, to try and enable continuity? Because there's that ongoing tension we all have of trying to balance access with continuity. And I, you know, if there was one magic appointment system, we would all have an identical appointment system. So there clearly isn't. But I think if there was more investment back into the number of GPs and the wider MDT that we had in the system, you could build back in even more continuity. Because I can understand why practices do end up prioritising access, which may seem in the short term that it eases your pain. But I think if you invest more in the continuity, there's good evidence coming through that might actually reduce people's encounters with healthcare, both from a GP, but the further downstream as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's evidence that it is actually able to reduce some of your workload, or certainly not increase it, because you've not got people revolving around in the system again and again, and you're getting to the root of things and people taking responsibility for that patient in front of them because they know them. Going through this process of thinking about the value of general practice actually made me reflect on the complexity of what I do when I see patients. And I've been doing it for so long now, it's almost just ingrained in what we do. Any thoughts about that, that kind of generalism process, Lindsay? I keep throwing massive questions at you, but what do you think?
Nice, easy questions for me, Chris. I think this is so important, and it's something we try and make sure that we, when we're talking to the medical students and we're trying to teach them about that generalist mindset, it's something that all doctors need now. It's not just a skill that GPs need, because we know the figures are roughly 1 in 4 patients will have multimorbidity or long-term conditions, and then often the polypharmacy that's associated with that. And medicine is very rarely, no matter where you work, it's very rarely a really straightforward linear process.
Yeah.
And it happens in people. And people have choices, and people have complex lives and other things going on in their lives. So if we don't train people to be able to sort of navigate uncertainty, complexity in a structured way that enables them to adapt to, and be flexible to what's going on in front of them, then they're just going to end up feeling at sea. They're going to be overwhelmed. They're going to then over-investigate. You mentioned, you know, obviously that fact that we can hold some of that uncertainty and risk. And that is something that some of the early evidence coming out, looking at perhaps healthcare professionals who've not had that same expert medical generalist training, that there seems to be some evidence coming through that they will order more blood tests, they will do more investigations, because they've had less expertise and experience in holding that risk and uncertainty, and actually being able to share that with patients, you know, saying, I don't quite know what's going on yet. I have some thoughts and hear what they are. And here's the options we have of what we do. And that might mean let's wait and see for a few weeks and see how the situation evolves, if that's clinically appropriate. But you've got to have the confidence and to be able to do that, but also the ability to explain that to a patient in a way that lets them make informed decisions about what happens next. You know, they might say, yeah, let's wait and see. I'd rather not have a colonoscopy if I don't need to have one.
So, Lindsay, one of my aims in this is I have really enjoyed, and it's been challenging enough, but not too challenging, and it's been a great job being a GP. And I want to encourage the next generation coming into general practice and medical students. What would you say to medical students nowadays considering a career in general practice?
So I do get the opportunity to speak to our medical students in their preparation for practice block just before they graduate. And I do always say to them that I consider GP to be a really positive choice. I share with them my own career journey, that I did emergency medicine, and I always slightly joke that I saw the light and then moved to general practice. It's just no offence to my emergency medicine colleagues, but general practice is a much better fit for me. I think it was clear really early on that I was a generalist, and I say to them, you know, if you love the complexity and the challenge and seeing lots of different things and working with people and getting to know a community, it's a really positive choice. And the other thing that I do is I make sure that the 5 years our students spend in medical school at Glasgow, is they get exposed to a whole range of different GPs with a whole range of different careers, so that they can see different positive role models and people who've consciously chosen to be GPs. And that includes our GP registrars, because they're the people who've most recently chosen to be GPs. So sometimes the students can see themselves becoming them. They can't see them themselves sometimes becoming middle-aged me. It's too far removed. It's too far removed for them. But the other thing that I do think is a really important part of the picture, because it's come out in some of the work that we've done, is us advocating for general practice is one part of that picture. But the other thing is they are influenced by things they see out with general practice. So if they have a hospital consultant says to them, as some have I've heard from our students say, oh, it'd be a waste for you to be a GP, then we need to challenge when we hear those things being said. But we also need to say to the students, you know, you would make a great GP. And that can really enthuse some of our students who are maybe sitting there thinking, oh, I don't know if I'd be any good at this. Sometimes it's really obvious to us that they'd be good, but they don't recognise that they would be good as GPs. And we also need to think a bit about that wider portrayal in the media and in policy and workforce around the decisions that are made, because the students aren't stupid. So if they see junior doctors or resident doctors striking because they say the working conditions aren't great, our students are sitting there going, well, that's going to be me in a few years. So we need to make sure that the jobs that they've got to go into are attractive. But I do still genuinely think it's a fabulous job. And hopefully that does come across when I speak to the students.
Absolutely. And one of the aspects I really like is watching a medical student or a GP registrar developing over time, over the years. And it's a kind of apprenticeship model, which I think is really, really useful way of learning, and certainly fits with what I like in medicine and working with people. So I think we need to just have those conversations with medical students and think about how we encourage them and get across the value of what we do, as you say.
And I'd add one more thing. I would say one of the other great joys of my job is I've been doing it long enough that I'm now seeing some of our medical students come back as our GP tutors because they've gone through GP training. And when you see them at interview and they just say, well, I loved vocational studies at Glasgow, so I now want to give back to the next generation. So I think as well, the other thing I will always do an opportunity for an advert to get involved with GP teaching, because the students just bring such joy to your day.
Absolutely.
As a GP. I'd keep you up to date.
They do, absolutely. And I'm old enough that I taught one of the partners in the practice as a medical student, but keep that quiet. Yeah, it's great. Teaching is one of the great aspects of general practice and bringing through the next generation. Just moving on to other areas, anything else about risk or the way we can get that point across? Because I don't think the public really understand or the system appreciate that risk holding.
Yeah, and I think it's having an honest conversation both with patients and society and policymakers around the fact you cannot eliminate risk in all situations. You just can't in healthcare. There's always going to be things you can't predict will happen. And you're often working in a sort of laws of probability. And so I think it's about you being able to identify where the risk and the uncertainty lies, and then being able to explain that to somebody else. And as clinicians, we all have different areas of where we tolerate risk or are intolerant of risk. And sometimes that could be because you've had a bad experience in the past.
That's right.
So
yeah.
That mm-hmm. might change your threshold when it comes to risk. Or there might be a particular patient, you know, we've all done that thing where you get a patient that I've been in the practice 20 years and you suddenly think, you've not seen a doctor for 20 years. So now the fact you're here in front of me, that's a real red flag to me. So it's we're eternal and trying to teach people that risk, but also trying to teach people that patients have different tolerance and relatives might have a different tolerance of risk to those patients. And that's why I think it's so important in GP training that our trainees do have that training around communicating risk, thinking about shared decision making. And I much prefer, I know people talk about that gatekeeper role in the NHS, and I don't particularly like that term when I think about us as GPs. I much prefer that realistic medicine lens of trying to see it through the lens of shared decision making and appropriate use of resources, because the reality is we do have a finite amount of resources and we need to use them best we can.
That's right. And hopefully you have less unnecessary investigations, but the right investigations, and you get that balance right for the individual patient in front of you, which is really what we're trained to do. You, at the beginning of this conversation, gave me a lot of different hats that you wear, which was illustrative of another section, Lindsay, of our role. And that's around the different roles that we do apart from face-to-face medicine with the person in front of us. Any thoughts about those types of different roles?
I think it's hugely important that people have the opportunity to develop a career where they can flourish and develop. And often what I notice is that those roles are what keep people having that joy in what they do. It is hard work if you were doing 10 clinical patient-facing sessions day in, day out. I will hold up my hands, I could not do it, but I do work 10 sessions. And the reason I can work 10 sessions is because I've got a balance of different things that I do. And some days, you know, if you're in practice, you can feel like you're in firefighting mode because you're just responding to everything that comes in. Whereas in contrast, when I'm in my academic job, quite often I'm planning what I do with that day. I will have pieces of work I need to get done, but I'm planning what order I'm doing, and it's less reactive. Although there are still emails, which in it, no matter where you go, emails find you, I think.
Absolutely.
No matter what role you're in. And I notice, and I'm really mindful when I'm thinking about our students, the diversity of the careers that GPs can have. And we can be advocates for our communities in different ways and advocates for general practice. And it's really positive for students to see the balance of different careers that people have, the leadership roles they have, and how they evolve and grow. Because if we don't, as GPs, step into those types of roles, then we get left out of decision making. We're not visible within the system, and we become the forgotten sort of little sister of hospital medicine if we don't sort of put our
oar in. No, I think that's right. And leadership roles are important, and giving GPs the training and the confidence to take on those roles. Research, also helping the rest of the MDT adapt to being in general practice, which is a different type of environment from the hospital. All of those different types of roles that GPs can do are really important. I like the fact that you don't describe us as gatekeepers, because we do 90% of the care. You know,
exactly.
We're not just passing everything on. Most of it we're keeping to ourselves, which is really important as well. One of the difficulties around this, Lindsay, is, you know, explaining this. And this paper that we did, The Value of General Practice, is meant to be for decision makers and also the profession itself. How do we get across the value? Because it can be quite difficult to explain.
Yeah, it's really complex. And I think that my approach to this has changed over the years. And maybe it's because I come at this as an academic. I always thought I would start with the kind of academic argument. And also the value for patients. And I think those are really important. But what I've realised over time is for some people, that's not the motivators for them. And I've kept on in the past trying to make the same argument better and better and better, and yet they're still not hearing it. And then I was talking to a colleague last summer who said, oh, yes, have you ever come across this theory called Schwartz's theory of human values? And it talks about how different people are motivated by different things.
Right.
And actually, so you need to then try and see it through what is the motivator for them. Is it about prestige? Is it about finance? Is it about the patient experience? Is it about health outcomes? Is it a politician who's thinking about, I want to get re-elected next summer, for example? So if you can try, and as GPs, we should be good at this. We do the whole what matters to you, what are your ideas, concerns and expectations. So if we can figure out what means something to that person in front of you, and then try and take one of the broad range of reasons that we've been talking about, but forefront the one that perhaps means the most to them as a way of trying to influence them. Somebody the other week was saying to me, does that not mean you're trying to manipulate them and we're just giving in to our own values because actually we're arguing about the wrong thing? And I can see where they're coming from, but I think if we want to actually influence change, we do need to have the levers to enable people to change their mind or their perspective on something. And us just making the same argument better and better if they're not hearing it isn't going to help us achieve what we want to achieve. And as long as our underlying reasons and values and principles are the same and we're not compromising those, then I'm quite happy to reframe what I prioritise in the discussion.
That's really, really interesting. And to a kind of extent, we've done that unconsciously in the paper, because it's got a section on really the value to the system around really the sense of investing in it and how it helps the whole system. It protects the hospital as a shield if it's properly invested in. And there's international evidence around that. It talks about the academic work about how GPs use broad knowledge and work with patients. As I say, I've read a couple of books about that, and it gets very, very academic. It's really fascinating. So our challenge was boiling it down to something that you could actually comes across in the paper, hopefully. And then it's about looking at what makes the job enjoyable and doable for the next generation, which we're keen, and that's around having different types of roles, also working with patients and the benefits to them and others of continuity, all of those types of things.
Yeah, I think the other thing I would maybe add in is it's really important we value the role of the GP, but it's also really important that we are, as GPs, are valued, and I wouldn't ever underestimate that. You know, we always talk about general practice being a vocation, and we love what we do, and we've invested, you know, years and years of our lives in training to be GPs and working as GPs. But sometimes I think it's so easy to forget to prioritise our own well-being as part of that. And I was reading some work earlier on decision fatigue, for example, and how people get to the point in the day where actually they start prescribing more antibiotics, for example, because they've just overwhelmed with the workload. And I think when we're thinking about how do we value ourselves, but also how do the people who are in charge of decisions relating to workforce make sure that we value the people who are in the system to make sure that they can function at the best level that they can. And then the learners coming through the system can see this is a real positive career choice to choose to be a GP, because actually it's a great job and people are able to do it to the best ability that they can do. And so it's just to remember, I think, the value of the role, but also the people who have chosen to do the role, because I think that's such an important part of the picture and such a precious part of the NHS.
That's a fantastic summary, Lindsay, and I'm just going to end on that, because that was a really good point around the value of who we are, what we do for our patients. So it just remains to say thank you very much, and managed to really have a great conversation about things, and I really, really appreciate that and your help with preparing this paper and going forward. Thank you very much.
Not at all, Chris. Complete pleasure as always. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Generally Speaking, the RCGP Scotland podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date with all of the work and news from across the college.